through someplace to meet.
Yep, Don Meeks, I'm here.
Okay. And myself, which does not make a quorum.
What did it happen?
Teresa is stuck at a meeting in Hood River.
Okay.
So with that said, I guess we have an informational meeting and follow the agenda as we do that.
Yeah, I will note there are currently three vacancies on the committee, and those are in process, and those are moving in the process to council next is the next step.
How long does that generally take?
It
3 months to make it.
It is so we forwarded those. They got stuck at some point in the process, but they've now moved on, and so they're going to council now. It's been a couple months in two of the cases, and the other it's been longer than that.
So normally they don't take that long. It's just it happened to get stuck.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, speakers. Do anybody wants to speak?
Hey, Jim, since we don't have a quorum, it's Don. This is really unfortunate. I do feel like we need to move the conversation along in terms of when we want to meet and how exactly we accomplish that. I think Janice was on to something in so much to say that if we could flex the time, well, not necessarily the time, the day that we met, we may have a greater attendance at some of our meetings and get through this quorum bit, despite having the vacancies. As you know, just having a little bit of flexibility is important. What I think is important, and what I was trying to emphasize in our previous conversations, was that if we go ahead with a flexible or an alternate schedule, whatever you want to call it, we need a mechanism to inform the public with enough time to be able to react, and not only on the website, but through other means as well. And I don't know how to accomplish that. And that's really what I would like to see out of that analysis. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Item one on unfinished business.
Right, it's coming up.
So basically, if we were to discuss it and get all the way except where we start, you know, to the point where we can't vote because we don't have a quorum, is I think I hear what you said.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Anyway, do we have anyone who wants to speak? I guess my next question.
John.
I'm a member of the public. Can we go to the microphone or?
Just if you could come up to the table, that'd be super.
I remember this chair not too long ago. Great. Well, I just wanted to thank everyone, especially Lindy. Mostly Lindy, because she came to a Rotary Club, Three Creeks, last month. And then I know we didn't have our meeting last month, so I wasn't able to share this details then. But everyone in the club really appreciated. She went in depth, as well as both in terms of how the parks are run, but also into some specific projects. And it was extremely warmly received by the club. So I really wanted to let everybody know and extend my appreciation. And I also wanted to give, as a member of the public, but also a likely potential future board member. This is, and the one largely responsible for initiating the movement of the meeting. I just wanted to say that it has my limitations on Tuesday, the second Tuesday of the month has kicked in starting last month. So I will have to step out at 4:30 today, but moving forward, if we're able to move the meetings to the first, the third, the fourth Tuesday of the month, any Monday, any Wednesday, Fridays, I'm available. So I have a pretty flexible schedule. Aside from that, just the second Tuesday is the bad day. So I apologize for any inconvenience for that, and hopefully we can figure out a way to move forward. But if not, then I'm happy to figure something else out then. But thank you all. I really appreciate it.
Else? Dustin. Mr. Husting?
Oh, hi. Hello, everyone. My name is Harrison Husting. I am a transportation planner with Clark County's Community Planning Department. And I'm actually I came here today to kind of stop in your meeting. In my role, I also serve as the staff coordinator for the county's Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. During kind of last year's work plan, the group had identified that they wanted to strengthen and also kind of build on some of the partnerships that they have with other agencies and groups in the community. And so I had reached out to see if possibly the Parks Advisory Board was interested in kind of creating some collaboration between the two groups. I know, just to give some background, the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee does help advise the county with implementing the vision in the 2010 Bike and Ped Master Plan. And there are a number of trails that are listed in that plan. And so I thought maybe, it might be beneficial for, or it seemed like there was a lot of interest that aligned between the two groups. I had a conversation with David last fall, and I went on leave for a couple of months. And so kind of circling back, making that connection, wanted to come back to talk to you guys today. So.
We'd be happy to chat with you. I don't know what the mechanism is here, but yes.
If I can fill in some information, Harrison and I actually attended one of the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee meetings, and I think the general idea was that there would be a Parks Advisory Board member who would be an at-large sort of ex officio member of the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee, and vice versa, so that they would attend those meetings and then report back. And it might not be that it's a monthly thing, but a quarterly thing, where there's just a little bit stronger connection between the two groups. And I believe we talked about that in December of last year, or maybe November of last year, informally during our sort of manager's update or round robin at the Parks Advisory Board meeting. So we're just trying to close that loop at this point. And it may be that we need to, continue that conversation once we have a Parks Advisory Board quorum. But I did encourage Harrison to dial in and at least introduce himself tonight and continue to continue the conversation thread. So.
Yes. I think we should.
Jim, I was going to say, I want to make a motion that we go ahead and put that on the agenda for the very next meeting to designate a primary and alternate.
Okay. Yeah. We do that, Amy. Thank you.
Jim, do you have any comment?
Yeah.
Yes.
So they can hear.
So Brandon Erickson, so I guess technically a member of the public, but any board member. So I'm actually on the Philadelphia Neighborhood Association Subcommittee for Traffic, Bicycle, and Pedestrian Safety. I'm making a presentation this evening, actually. We have done an extensive survey of the residents in the Philadelphia area. We have heat maps of areas of concern. I think we've actually been asked to share our data with this advisory board and also with Public Works. So when you were mentioning a liaison between the two boards, I'd be interested in being that liaison unless there's someone else who feels really strongly about that.
Right.
Because I'm already involved in doing that same kind of thing with the Planet Neighborhood Association.
Cool. Thank you.
And then since I'm here,
yeah.
Regarding the moving of the meeting, my only request would be that it not be the first Monday.
Okay.
That's what our conference then that would preclude me from coming.
Okay. Thanks.
Jim, just a quick comment on or thought on context here. So Harrison's work absolutely focused on transportation, multimodal, active transport network within the county. That crosses over parks work that we also develop trail system within our parks, connecting our streets and right-of-way areas to our parks and then parks to parks. So there's a natural connection. And so sharing that committee member liaison across groups would be really beneficial just to help connect the dots and fill in each group, fill in those gaps of knowledge and information.
I have a question of clarification from Harrison's responsibility. Does that section division build trails along roads or elsewhere outside of the parks, and then the trails parks builds would need to connect? So they're both trail building organizations? That's the question.
Yeah, Harrison, if you.
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I think, like I mentioned, so the BPAC kind of oversees or kind of helps the county with the bike and ped master plan. And I think there is crossover, like the trails that are mentioned in the bike and ped master plan are also in the parks open space plan as well. And so some newer work that we're working on right now. So in my department, we're helping with the comprehensive plan update. That's required to be completed by the end of 2025. And some newer legislation is having us look at multimodal kind of connections as part of some of the updates that we have to make to our transportation chapter. And so we're looking at how in our 20-year transportation project list, how we include, basically we're going to be including new multimodal projects within that list, and some of those could be trails, but from the transportation perspective, they would have to be used mostly for. There needs to be an argument that they would be used for commuting purposes. So I think the crossover would be trails within maybe like the urban context, where you could see a lot of like urban. Like commuting and in some of the urban growth areas. So I hope that kind of answers the question, but I don't know if transportation has it even thought about looking at trails before when they looked at potential transportation projects. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, and in most communities, the trail network is both. Mm-hmm. It's some parts are the transportation as the first priority. Other parts of the system are recreational in nature, and it's the blending of the two that makes the system whole. How you interconnect the transportation sections or the active mobility sections with the recreational sections.
Preferably and like this.
at times it's when you're using a trail, it's uncertain what the intent is, and a well-built system can blend those two so that you can't tell the difference. And so, yeah, that's the importance of having that connection on committees.
It's also very important from a funding perspective, because these types of projects almost always get funded through multiple funding streams, whether it's, you know, our park funds and transportation funds and grant funds that are transportation focused and recreational trail project money from the state. And so the more we collaborate, And the more we communicate with each other, the more sort of success we're going to experience in actually implementing the elements in the bicycle pedestrian master plan. That obviously, regardless of whether you're riding it to and from work or whether you're riding it with your kid trailer, those facilities serve the entire public. So.
Thank you. It's up to you again.
All right, manager's report. So we are, we have a whole slew of projects this year, as you're well aware, that were included in the capital plan, adopted capital plan. And so David's team, our park planning and development team, is hard at work. We've got playground replacements and improvements at parks and brand new parks that have yet to be developed. Really an exciting year. So as we make progress through that list of projects, we will bring those updates to you at this meeting, but just wanted to make you aware that we are in the early portion of the year and activating and developing contracts and agreements with developers on these various projects. So we're at different phases with different projects right now. But very, very excited for the improvements that will come out of this year's capital work.
I didn't look last week. There was a planning commission meeting that we were, I think the parks, I forget which plan it was, the Gap plan, I think, was getting presented to the planning commission.
Which plan was that, Jim?
It was opens. I think it was resource land.
It was resource land, and then we parks were in
space and resource land.
Okay, all right. Somebody else.
Yeah. I believe parks is slated for August. That's what I understand.
Okay, I'll look it up.
Which is
Okay.
I think it's for the GMA.
It was. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And there was a parks presentation somebody did. Okay.
Great.
Thank you. All right, Don, back to our bylaws change here, Russ.
All right, this has been a development topic. We first addressed this months ago, and we had some really good conversations. We have reopened after adopting new bylaw update. We have reopened that discussion, and so tonight's item one under unfinished business is revised number three, which this item in our bylaws, which is attached to the agenda, is the meetings section on page five of the bylaws. And we were discussing which days of the week should we meet or shall we meet, and how should the bylaws be written to reflect that or reflect flexibility in the specific meeting date. So you can see the current section one reads, the regular public PAB meeting, Parks Advisory Board meeting, is held quarterly on dates to be determined by the advisory board members. Meeting dates shall be dependent upon county staff availability, and conflicts with other county meetings should be avoided. Special meetings may be held as often as the board deems necessary. All meeting dates, agendas, and minutes will be posted on the Clark County website. So that's how it reads currently. In its current version, this is the updated version that we're looking at that you all adopted, currently provides flexibility to change the meeting date. And so the discussion was around how shall we proceed? And one of the ideas thrown out was to leave the section one broad so that we had flexibility to decide when the meeting fell, and would provide the ability as different members join the committee that we would be able to adapt to people's needs and move the meeting dates. And the second, I believe, was to pick a day of the week and put that in the meeting, or in the meeting, I'm sorry, the committee bylaws. So those were kind of the two things that I recall being discussed.
My memory says that we've had it as monthly, and the legal review came out with
quarterly.
With quarterly, and we had not agreed on the quarterly. So in my mind, that's where we left it. It was discussing how to address that, my words, inadvertent misleading of the public that it's only quarterly. That is part of what I would like to discuss. And I don't know that they did that on purpose. I think it was a quick review by a busy person.
I thought that was what was in the original.
And then they reviewed it and somehow changed it to quarterly, which I don't know about anybody else, but it caught me by surprise.
It didn't bother me at all, to be honest with you. I'm in a committee that meets annually, every month.
So it may be
just a requirement.
That may be a result of what's actually in the county code and the resolution that was passed to create the committee. That may be why it's was updated to quarterly, but we can find that out.
Since we're not going to make a move to approve any specific wording, perhaps someone could check with the legal and find out, was that some hidden requirement that we didn't know about?
So research item number one for staff is to look into whether the bylaws can indicate that the meetings are on a monthly basis rather than a quarterly basis.
I hope so, because if I remember the public and wanted to go onto the website of the county and it says quarterly, I'll say, oh well, okay, let's see, that's going to be in 2 months, I'll set my calendar, and then to find out they had one without me after all because I put it off for 2 months. That would be not servicing that member of the public that had that discovered.
We'll research that and bring that back.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Next month we will finish this.
With regards to the day of the week, once we put that detail in, then we're stuck there if we ever want to change it.
Right.
Unless we word it such that maybe it changed with appropriate, I don't know what the appropriate rules are in the county public notice, you know, how far ahead you're required to post on the website. I don't know that. But if we were to want to pick a day of the week, we would want to have that flexibility because we might not like it. Right. And then based on my other board thing where it seems like every time we turn around, we're talking about changing the bylaws again. It's cumbersome.
Yes.
Don actually lost connection and then just did it.
Okay.
He's gone.
All right. Okay. Guess we know where we're at.
So Janice, what I heard from you was you would prefer to leave it broad.
Yes.
Upon due consideration, waiting for a month, I think we should leave it broad. But we should at least have an expectation for ourselves and for the public generally, you know, the website, not the bylaws, could say, we generally hold these on pick a day, whatever it is. And there will be the website. What do you have? What do you require yourselves? A week, 2 weeks public notice? There's got to be some rules.
How early do you post agendas to notify?
Typically, so 5 days before the meeting.
Which you're always so good at getting stuff out a week ahead. So you know, the website could say, generally on Tuesdays, let's just pick a day for the sake of argument. Notice will be given if that were to change.
Yeah.
And keep this more general.
Absolutely. I will note that this committee is not not required to comply with the same rigor in terms of notifications as, say, a council or a council subcommittee.
Right.
So while we are following that, we have flexibility if things did change that we could change it with still notification, but wouldn't have the same requirements as the council would have.
The other thing then that we had before was it was the X day of the week of the month. So what is this, the second? This is the second. currently, we're meeting second Tuesday.
Correct.
What do you think?
It's not in there now, what day specifically it is.
Right now, it doesn't say.
No, I know, but it hasn't.
Yeah.
And I don't think we need to change it, to be honest with you.
There's no requirement to put that.
We just have to figure it out amongst the board members that exist at the time.
And if you look at, you go back years, you know, they used to be on Friday. When I originally started coming to these things, they had them on Friday. Somewhere along the line, was it COVID or something? Along the line, they switched. I don't remember what it was. Tuesday doesn't work, make it Friday. I don't care.
So when our attorney drafted this section, as we gave input into what you wanted it to be, what you wanted to be reflected in the section, we indicated at the staff level that the meeting date shall be dependent upon county staff availability and conflicts with other county meetings. We included that because, quite honestly, I think part of the reason that PAB meets on Tuesdays is because this is when there's space available, and if we don't conflict with another committee meeting where folks might feel like they need to pick one or the other. And so that's just a consideration more than anything, and it provides flexibility to avoid other meetings, other committee meetings throughout the
committee. Yeah, and that could change at any time based on all those other commitments
and or other staff committee commitments. So we have staff that are liaisons or staff for another advisory committee, and so this would just help us to avoid that. And then the other element is space availability. Now, we're not required to be in person, so there could be flexibility with virtual meetings, but there are only so many spaces we would be able to actually meet if we want a physical space. So.
Okay. Next month, get rid of this place.
So we're not going to make a move because that requires voting. Okay. We're just going to say, I think what I want to have out of it is put it back to monthly if they say it's okay after due consultation, and leave everything as vague as it is now.
Okay.
You okay with that, Jim? Mm-hmm. I think Teresa would be too. Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind the quarterly. I think it gives you flexibility also.
I do.
I know. But we get two meetings now that aren't really meetings.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, that happens.
Yes. Yeah, I know it does. But anyway, okay. On to the next one.
All right. Next. Next section is new business. So we have, speaking of physical locations for meetings.
Yes.
We wanted to share. This is just purely an informational item. The building at Heritage Farm has a conference room. Amy has visited that space and is it. Very capable of the technology that's available in that space, has learned how to utilize everything in that location. So we just wanted to share and make sure you're aware that space is also available. So if there was a conflict in this space, pick a different day of the week and this space is booked by another group, there is that location that's right down the street. So we wanted to make you all aware of that.
Would we have to change the bylaws?
Change the bylaws.
It says, typically hell. Well, that's what I was. No, seriously, I have that circle for that reason. So here's my question. Is it cheaper to hold it there, given how much it costs to cool this thing in the summer and heat it in the winter? And or is it easier for you, Amy, to set up over there?
So it cannot be held here like April, whatever the busy months are, and all of the fields are taken. We're not supposed to be using this room. So that's the dilemma. Mm-hmm. And then set up, it's much smaller. It's a more intimate space. So I don't know. It's has its own unique challenges, but it's right down the road. So it's not super easy, and they have tons of parking.
And all of this is it's just as easy for you there?
Sure. Yeah. That sounds good.
Not
longer. Yeah, Amy's very capable with technology. So. So when we do have conflicts with the space, that we can pop over to them.
As opposed to, we should just start meeting there.
Yeah, and it's completely up to you where you'd like to meet, but we wanted to make sure you knew them.
Sounds good. Besides that, looks like we're going to get a chance to maybe see.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, item two is another informational item. We have a Heritage Farm Advisory team is a group of folks of parties interested in Heritage Farm and organizations that work at the farm. So this would include groups like Washington State University Extension, our garden organizations that grow food on a regular basis. A significant impact to our community. That food is then largely donated out to food bank and other organizations. Group, that Heritage Farm Advisory Group, is interested in having a joint meeting at some point in time this year.
Love to. Yeah.
Okay. So at the last meeting, we posed this question. We think it would be good for you all to learn what they're doing and then also for them to learn what you're doing. It is that site is a future capital project site. So we will be making capital improvements at that location this year. There's a clean water project to improve the stream and the wetland in that property.
Yeah.
It'll be really amazing. Be a great time to kind of share that out, progress on that project. It'd be a great time to share out our plans for the site in terms of park and public access and have everybody in the room at the same time. So we wanted to float that and see what your thoughts were. It sounds like that's a affirmative.
If we do it at the right time of year, we could even go and hike over to that little park at the corner. Sorry. that our little capital, we could give them a tour if we timed it right.
Yeah. Over the hill and down the other side.
Yeah. Cool.
Great.
And help.
I'm sharing the file. Hang on a second. It's connecting. Okay, there we go. Yay! This time it's better for me. Alrighty. So my name is Danielle Cowley, for those that may not know me. I am the lands coordinator for Legacy Lands, and we're here today to talk about establishing a subcommittee for our acquisition projects. So just a reminder, we did this last year, February of 2024, council approved our guidance manual illustrating the process for how we move through the system for funding for Legacy Lands conservation properties throughout the county. And then it will come back to the Parks Advisory Board for approval to move forward. So here's the current schedule as we see today. We are currently accepting applications from all the approved sponsors by April 1st. We did give them an additional month. And so you can kind of see this is a typical 3-year window in terms of when we do our funding cycles for our various sponsors. And you guys have seen this exact same thing last year. All right, so what I am seeking is a select few to establish a subcommittee. The time commitments are as follows. So we would be doing on-site tours with our sponsors to look at their projects. And then they will be presenting to the subcommittee in June. At that time, that subcommittee will be ranking those various projects that are, you know, that have been submitted for approval. And then at that point, we'll come back to Parks Advisory Board in July to vet those projects. At that point, we will set up a council work session to review the recommended adopted or recommended projects for council. So you can kind of see the time commitment there. It's really the top two tier things. Right now, we don't know what our applications are. I don't have any currently on file yet. I know that I've talked to three different project sponsors for about four different projects. So we'll see who comes in. Like I said, applications are due April 1st. And these projects are exclusively for conservation properties with passive recreation, wildlife corridors, you know, stream corridors, etc. And they're ranked against that criteria that was approved in the guidance manual. So with that, I guess this is more informational at this point. I would seek that next meeting, the Parks Advisory Board would be able to establish less than like three max subcommittee members to present or to basically be a part of that subcommittee. And until we know the applications, we really don't know how much time that would be with site visits and then, you know, yeah, the presentations and the rankings. So
we'll know next time.
Well, we will know April 1st.
And we might have 47 members here too.
Correct. Correct. So this is a picture into the future.
Yeah. Now let me go.
Yeah. So is there any questions you guys might have related to this ask?
Just out of curiosity, who tend to be the sponsoring agencies?
Yeah, so it's cities. Let me back up. I've got actually the code. Sorry. I should have printed my notes. I didn't print my notes. Sorry.
It's
cities, nonprofits like Columbia Land Trust, the town of Yakult, the Nature Conservancy, and then the Washington Farmland Trust. So those types of agencies. It is actually an established rule by the Washington State Legislature. So the Legacy Lands Program was approved or adopted by the county council in 85, but the rule came from the Washington Legislature. So we follow their jurisdictional rules.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're required to distribute the funds throughout the county since every taxpayer contributes towards Conservation Futures Fund. And I think in addition to that, the county is required to have an advisory board of sorts to make those recommendations to council. And so council passed a resolution last year with the Parks Advisory Board would fill that role. The Parks Advisory Board had been filling that role for several years, dating back to, I think, 2016. But the resolution last year formalized that rule.
That'd be somebody next yeah. Door around.
Yeah.
And I know if I could add just a thought, the Legacy Lands Program makes a huge impact throughout the county and has acquired some amazing properties that will be held in public ownership in perpetuity. And those are the amazing spaces that you all know, have visited, have seen. But when you see it on a map too, maybe bring a map at the next meeting. It is, it's really amazing. And without the Legacy Lands Program and the Conservation Futures Fund tax, it wouldn't be possible to acquire that property. Some counties have not adopted, it sounds like we adopted in 84, which is probably pretty early, probably one of the first counties to adopt that program. It's not a requirement that a county adopt that program. So
gives us a nice, I poured over that brochure. It's on the website. It's pretty amazing. All those little dots I have yet to explore.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the other thing is it helps helps the county meet the goals of the Parks Recreation Open Space Plan. So a lot of the natural areas, a lot of the properties eventually become regional parks or even developmental parks. So it really helps us to achieve those goals as a county.
Well, for the good of the order, go home early.
I had a question. That joint meeting you were talking about between this advisory board and Heritage Farm Advisory Board, is that room big enough for everyone and maybe some public? Because you said it was a little smaller than the space.
Oh, darn, we won't get to see the space.
I don't know if you can have it outside, like she was talking about.
Of our little park.
Heritage Farm is not big enough to support it. Not with all of you, with all of the people and potentially the public and Heritage Farm and all the partners. No, have to be here.
So the Heritage Farm Committee, that group is a, from what I understand, is not a council advisory group. So whereas you are, Parks Advisory is. And so they advise staff. It's a really important group for decisions that are made at the Heritage Farm from a programming perspective, a development perspective. It's a key connection with our community who benefits from the food that's grown at the farm. And so that's just it's a vital group, but just so everybody's aware of that.
There's an advisory team, which is really actually informal. So
I think they'll run the place.
So who has to do the preparation to better educate each other on the topics we discuss? In other words, are you and your staff going to basically be educating them, or are we needing to step up and help educate them on what we discuss?
So I think at this joint meeting, when we schedule that, we'll work with them in their schedule and also yours. At that meeting specifically, we'll bring up topics and projects that are happening at Heritage Farm, and that will be highlighted at the meeting. We'll also have non-farm items on the agenda, I would imagine, as well.
Like ours.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So they have had meetings here. And I've been to a number of them.
Correct.
Over the years. That whatever that how what the occasions are, but they've got a pretty large group of people that work on this stuff. You've got the extension people, and you got the future farmers, and I mean, all kinds of people, master gardeners, WSU, just a bunch of people.
You know, Jim, as you're talking, maybe that's an agenda item, right? We have that group present and talk about what's happening at the farm, their impact, the work they do. Washington State University Extension obviously they published an annual report of the work that they do there. So it might be a good agenda item if that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Whatever's convenient. If we had to go to theirs too. Anything else for the good of the order between you and me?
You ready for the last item?
Oh, what are we missing? This one. Oh, I did. Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yes.
I was kind of waiting for that.
So this is a continuation of our last meetings conversation where we discussed parks and the sustainability and the current financial picture of parks. And so we promised we would come back with an updated version of that deck and to update you all as to where we're at. It's not sure. Excuse me. Why do you think it's not sharing here, Amy? Let me open it again. I'll start from scratch and we'll reopen it.
I need to get Danielle to be able to do it. So maybe you've got a lockdown. I don't even know.
Enough control.
Okay, there. Now you're a co-organizer.
Should share. There we go.
Good to know.
This is good. We'll go full screen mode and see if that doesn't like full screen mode. That's the problem. I will now share not full screen mode. How's that sound? Okay. Thanks for your patience. So we, you recall, we talked about this. We walked through the draft, really early draft deck, showing the picture of parks and nature and the financial picture ahead and the opportunities and challenges ahead. So we'll walk through this. This is the current iteration, the current version. We're intending to go to council with this month. Once that date is official and finalized, we'll make sure you all are aware of it. But just it's looking like the last week of March for a work session. 26th is what we're aiming for. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about. We'll just give you an overview. We'll talk about the mission of Parks and Nature. We'll talk about the current state of the system, the current state of the finances. We'll look at budget projections for the out into the future, 5 years out. And then we'll talk about how we can develop a more sustainable park system and more sustainable. So the Parks and Nature Division of Public Works Department is focused in these areas. One, acquiring new parkland. We talked about one method of that acquisition through Legacy Lands. But there are a number of different ways that we acquire properties to meet the growth needs of the system. We then plan for and design future parks with that land and develop those future parks into actual usable spaces. And really key to this process is ensuring that our community has a meaningful say in what we're developing and meets the specific parks acquired and developed meet the specific needs of our community. As we do really, really strong, meaningful engagement through our development of our long range plan, which is our PROS plan. And then once it's developed, we maintain and operate those spaces. So we're in one of those spaces right now as you drove up and as you can hear outside, we've got folks playing and using the park space on a daily basis. Our parks are very heavily visited. And as a result of that use, it requires upkeep and maintenance and cleanup. And then a key part of that is making sure that people have access to the spaces through permitting, rentals. Some people prefer to have a space rented so they know it's theirs. They don't need to drop in and hope they get a picnic shelter, for example. They want to be able to plan for that. So in all, it's about, these are rough numbers, especially on the legacy land front. So we have 111 parks and sites. And what I mean by sites are legacy lands and parks. We've got about 5,000 acres plus of legacy land, 5,500. I'll update that. So those are legacy lands. Those are areas set aside for conservation purpose. They are land for land's sake, natural areas. They are, as you heard Danielle talking, it's a lot of it is in waterway corridors, rivers and creeks and streams and wetlands and sensitive spaces. Those legacy lands can be utilized for recreation purposes too. So oftentimes you'll see trailheads developed on those legacy lands. And then there are almost 7,200 acres of actual parkland that are separate from the legacy lands. The parkland is more active recreation. So you're in a park right now that is a good example of that. Active ball fields and trails and playgrounds. So that's kind of a big overview of what it is we do and what's currently in our system in terms of inventory. The parks are broken down by category for planning purposes and for ensuring that we're acquiring the right types of spaces for the right needs. So neighborhood parks, those are small areas. Those are typically what you would see in an urban area. Most of our, almost all of our neighborhood parks are located within the urban growth boundary of Vancouver. community parks, those are bigger, 20 to 100 acres in size. They serve a bigger area, often within 3 miles of that community park. It serves that group of residents and businesses. Regional parks are larger, so they're 50 acres or larger. They're typically in our system, they're much bigger than 50 acres. We have a number of these in our portfolio. So Louisville and Frenchman's Bar and Vancouver Lake are examples of those large regional parks. And they serve the entire county. They get a lot of use and are greatly loved by our community. And then natural areas, I mentioned. We've got a lot of natural areas where people love to hike and mountain bike and horseback ride. And we've got some amazing spaces for people to recreate in. And here's just some data on usage. This is the number of shelter rentals. So this is last year's data, so 2024 numbers. Shelter rentals, we had 1,700. Special events, these are weddings and corporate picnics, and we had 260 of those almost. We at Luke Jensen alone, the park we're in, we booked over 3,600 hours of use. And we sold passes. We sell parking passes in 4 of our regional parks. We sold 5,600 last year, and those are parking passes for the entire season. And then day out, where you could just drive in and pay for that day, we collected parking fees from almost 140,000 visitors. So now that's probably just a portion of the actual visitors. A car can have more than one, right? So these are just really good numbers that are actuals that we know visited our parks. So I want to talk a little bit about why we exist. What's our mission? What are we aiming for? Talk a little bit about that. And why we exist is for a number of reasons. But the first is from a statute perspective, the State Growth Management Act indicates a need to set aside natural areas and parkland and places for people to recreate. That shows up in the WAC and the RCW. These are state rules and statutes. These are the actual code numbers for parks and natural spaces. Also within the county's comprehensive plan, as a requirement of the Growth Management Act, you'll see the reasons for setting aside the policy for setting aside natural areas of parkland. And then at the park specific level and as part of the comp plan is our Parks and Recreation Open Space Trails Plan. And so this is the policy side of why we exist. And then let's talk about for people who actually use our spaces and for the staff, what we are actually doing is not building parks. It's not building trails. It's for these reasons. The people in our community use parks for health and wellness, mentally, emotional, physical wellness. These are the spaces that are free for everybody to use in large part. They're a key part of our economic vitality in our county. Just the tournaments and baseball games and soccer league games and the visitors that those bring into Clark County from outside has a significant impact on our local economy. And we work, another element of our economic vitality is we work with nonprofits and for-profit businesses who activate our park spaces. It's a key component to a economically alive area. Ensuring that we have sustainable stewardship and ensuring that we have tree canopy throughout the county, cooling spaces for people to go. And then the last bullet point, and I read this from bottom to top, and that's access, ensuring that people can get to these public spaces so they're usable, accessible, welcoming for people in our community. And I mentioned earlier, you saw the data on usage, but our own polling reflects the essential nature of parks and natural areas throughout the county. When we did our PROS plan, we did a lot of outreach with our community, and this is some of what we heard. About 98% of respondents to our surveys indicated they think Parks and Nature is important to the quality of life in Clark County, and 91% of those that responded said they use a Parks and Natural Area at least once a month, and then fewer than 3% of those respondents said they have not used a park in the last year. It's a very small percentage of those we pull, but some good data. Let's talk about the current state of our Parks and Nature system. We're going to provide some data for you and some numbers. First of all, this is a map of parks and natural areas and legacy land properties throughout the county. We are zoomed way up. I don't know what elevation this would be, but we are way up, and it doesn't capture all of the spaces. We have some further north as well. So as you can see, we talked about those big regional parks. You can probably spot those pretty easily. Clackamas Lake Regional Park, for example, on the south end of Clackamas Lake. But you can also see the little dots and small parks. Those are the neighborhood parks within the urban growth boundary. And their urban growth boundary is really the city of Vancouver limits, are the darker brown, the darker tan color. And then the lighter color is that urban growth boundary to the north. Where most of the neighborhood parks are that serve folks who live, you know, maybe a few blocks away. So we have over 521,000 residents in Clark County. And within Parks and Nature, we have 31 full-time staff to maintain all of the spaces. That 7,200 in active parkland, and then the 5,500 in legacy lands. So that's a large community. Clark County is continuing to grow rapidly. We'll talk about that just a little bit. The operating budget for Parks and Nature, just the maintenance, day-to-day maintenance, the bathroom cleaning, the litter pickup, the graffiti removal, the mowing, the edging, the weed control, go down the list. If you maintain your own yard, you'll know what that entails, but this is on a much bigger scale, obviously. We'll talk a little bit about, we talked about how the growth is here. We're experiencing an era of growth. This is from our last PROS plan. So this indicates our acquisition, what we need to acquire in terms of parkland to keep up with that growth. We currently have a gap of 2,389 acres. And then of that acreage acquired, we have a gap of about 551 acres that we need to develop. That's that active park space in order to meet the needs of our community. So while we have an amazing system right now, we need to do more to meet the level of service standards.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
7,166 acres of parks.
Yeah.
I assume that was scattered amongst the 111 parks.
Correct. Actually, no. So the 111 encompasses legacy land sites as well. So it's 96 actual parks.
96 actual parks. Okay. So then you're saying that we're behind on those actual parks.
Correct.
By 551 acres.
If you measure it by acres.
Yeah, well, that's what you're doing.
Yep.
Okay.
And then it shows up here as well. So you can see the 2020 actuals in 2020 of what we have developed within. This is only within the urban growth boundary. So this does not include outlying areas of the county. The acreage measures in red parentheses under the left side there, that shows you our gaps in 2020. And then on the right side, it shows you our gaps in 2030. And the reason for this is we have a number of people moving to the county. That growth is going to continue. And we know we can't keep up at our current level of service. So we're projecting these gaps in the future.
I think they're widening, aren't they?
They're widening. So currently, how we maintain our parks, this is one measure, and this is some benchmarking with national data. So you can see when you take the national median, this isn't the average, this is the median. The median operating budget, so the expenditure spent on parks, is $57.61 per 10,000 residents. And in Clark County right now, this year's budget, we're at $15.62 per 10,000 residents. So significant gap. So that growth need we just talked about, we can't maintain those future spaces with this budget, right? Here's another way of looking at it. This is operating expenditure by acre. So if you take our current acreage and compare that against the operating expenditures, ours is at $1,135 per acre. That's how much we spend currently. The national median is $4,421. So we're at about a quarter of what the national median is.
So this county is actually bringing the median down.
Yes.
Don't you think? We're like at that end and somewhere else is at the other end. Wow.
So I'm wondering if you know in the national median and the other stat you showed, is that for a comparable level of service? Or are we at a lower level of service because of how constrained our budget is?
So, yes. So yes, that's a great way to look at it, too, Jenny. This is a one way to measure your level of service within your agency in terms of the maintenance level of service. Now, the report that we pulled this from is the National Recreation Parks Association, what's called the Agency Performance Review. You can Google it and look at the details. There's a lot more data. We pulled these out because we had a comparable. We had the data to compare against.
And this is just maintenance, basically.
Correct.
Yeah.
So this is for agencies over 250,000 population.
For the people that gripe about the cost of government, that's a really telling number. $15.62 per 1,000.
So how has the county?
10,000.
How has the county been able to pull this off?
That's cheap.
So one of the
we can't complain about that.
One of the ways the county has been able to pull this off is in a couple of ways. One, a number of our lands in this calculation are legacy lands. They're natural areas. Okay. The other agencies have those as well, and they very well may have the same acreage as us. All right, it's a difficult. You have to almost take those case by case. But the way that we've gotten by, is we have a number of agreements with nonprofit youth sports organizations where they maintain our sites. They essentially operate the site for us, and so. And we have hosts in our parks. So we have houses that are vacant. We've purchased property. And we have somebody who lives there voluntarily. And they help us maintain those locations.
Just for the privilege of working there. They're
correct.
Volunteer hosts. And then, but a big one of that is like down there in the East Fork of the Lewis, all those plantings, that's all with a cooperative and grants that the public here did not have to pay for.
Correct.
So there's a lot of that.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a perfect example of that.
Yeah, it is. So we looked at this one already. This is operating expenditures per acre. And there's one more measure we just wanted to share. That's full-time equivalent, full-time staff members per 10,000 residents. So the national median is 4.7. So that's half medians, half of the agencies are above that number and half of them are below that number. So that's how we compare in terms of our staffing level to residents, 10,000 residents. So percent of the. So yeah, you'll find agencies with a number higher than 4.7, and you'll find some with a number lower, but that's the middle number. So summary of that data, staffing level is significantly under the national median, I should say. We are not and will not meet growth needs for parks and natural areas. So while we have We have capital dollars coming in. That's the money to you that we use dedicated to acquiring and constructing new parks. What's clear is we do not have the maintenance and operations dollars to maintain those parks once they're built. And so we will not, as a result of that, we will not meet those growth gaps that we saw earlier in the deck because we can't maintain the spaces. And our operating expenditures significantly under the national median and deferred maintenance list continues to grow due to our staffing levels. So now let's take a look into the future in terms of budget. So we are maintaining currently, right, with the, all of those great nonprofits that we're partnered with and our hosts. But what does it look like in the future? So here's our regional parks. So these are parks outside of the Vancouver urban growth boundary. And you can see this is back to 2019 and forward to 2030. You can see the blue is our expense and the gray is our revenue. You can see there's a gap there every single year into the future and the gap grows. So that's the non-urban parks. And now let's look at the what we call the GCPD, which is an acronym for Greater Clark Park District.
Can I clarify again, that gap that we're seeing, that's to maintain our current level of service for what we're doing, not augmenting the level of service as we may desire.
Great point. That's just balance, just balancing, right? So you're not overspending the checking account.
Except you are.
So GCPD, this is the Greater Clark Park District, okay? This is these are the parks that are in the urban growth boundary of Vancouver. So north of the city limits, but south of that urban growth boundary. This is the future area of the development in the Vancouver area, at least. Same thing, same story. Gaps continue to grow up to 2030 beyond. Now let's just look at that data in a different format. So the same, these are the numbers. This is a chart showing you the actual dollar amount gap each year now through 2030. So our current delta is $832,000 this year. And into the future, 2030, we're over $2.1 million. So.
Are you assuming that you're not losing any parks to Vancouver growing?
Correct. This assumes that everything, all the parks that are currently present stay the same.
Yeah. City of Vancouver right now is about 20 years behind on their planned annexations.
Right.
They don't want to do it because
they're going to start having to expand their boundaries. And you talked about that 2 months ago. How you're going to lose a bunch of the parks. You know, the county's going to lose a bunch of parks because they'll turn city once Vancouver goes.
Correct.
And
I'll give you an example. Curtin Springs is in the boundary of Vancouver, and they did not take it. They did not take it.
So that, I'm glad you brought that up, Janice. We'll talk about that in just a minute. So summary of that section. Significant deficits exist in the current operating budget and worsening into the future, and it's simply not sustainable. Now let's talk about what the future looks like. How do we get to a sustainable state? How do we meet our growth needs? We're going to look at three scenarios. Here's the growth projections.
Could I back up just
a minute?
What you haven't shown is your current sources of growth.
Yeah, we didn't get into sources, but you can see revenue here. Mm-hmm. The primary source is the Greater Clark Park District. Mm-hmm. That's the area within the urban growth boundary north of Vancouver and south of that line, that growth boundary line. In 2005, voters approved what's called a Metropolitan Park District. That is that means the folks in that area, businesses and residents, pay a rate each month. I believe it's a 13 cents per thousand. And that is the bulk of the revenue produced. Rentals brings in about $800,000 annually, a little bit more. And the other source is the general fund subsidy, which is about $1.6 million.
Okay. I want to throw that in there.
Okay. Good to know. Thank you. So here's the growth projections. The top, this bar chart is from our PROS plan. So this was completed in 2022. So you can see in 2040, projections from the state were that we would be at 643,000 residents in the county. And if you go down to the section cells below, you can see the projection. We are essentially the projections from 22 have been blown past, and they have revised them. The bottom table are the most current projections. So even though we are projecting growth, even the projections are behind the actual growth. So we are growing at a faster pace than what has been projected.
You know, the fires in Southern California didn't help.
Here's another format, the same information. This shows you kind of the high and the low assumption, and then the middle is what we saw on this last slide. That red dashed line. Okay, so here are the three scenarios we're going to talk about for our future. And they revolve around meeting that upcoming growth, not meeting that upcoming growth, and another scenario we'll talk about. Okay, so what if we don't do anything? What if we keep those gaps that we walked through? What if we keep the budget gaps? We do not add new staff, essentially don't take any action. So here's what the future looks like. We will be forced to close parks. We will not have the fund that you saw by 2030. We'll have over a $2 million gap. We will have to close parks to reduce our operating expense. Within parks that stay open, we'll probably have to close amenities within those parks. We'll have a decline in level of service, which means we're visiting restrooms less often, we're maintaining trails less often, picking up trash less often. We essentially need to end new park acquisition if we don't have the funds to maintain those properties. And we wouldn't be developing anything new. We would have safety issues and deferred maintenance throughout the system, which would cause liability and risk for the county. And by extension, the residents and businesses of the county. So that's the decline scenario. If we do nothing and we leave things as they are. If we close that gap, if we find a way to figure out how to find that just that gap amount. So this doesn't mean finding a whole bunch of more money to meet the future growth needs that we looked at. This is just closing the gap. We could keep parks open and amenities open. We would have the funding to fill only the gap. We would not be able to grow the system. We would be able to do limited preventative maintenance. We wouldn't increase our level of service, and we wouldn't be able to address any deferred maintenance, the things that we have put off for years, that roof at your house that you know needs to be replaced, but just can't deal with it because you don't have the funding. That's what it would look like. That's the sustained scenario. And then the last scenario is the fulfill scenario. We find funding to maintain our level of service consistent with our peer counties. Figure out how we can reach that median average, right, that we looked at earlier. We would be able to deal with preventative maintenance, and that preventative maintenance need could scale with the growth of the system. We can keep pace with growth so that additional almost 100,000 new residents, when they move to Clark County as projected, we would be able to build parks and natural areas in the areas where they move so that we would meet their needs. And then we would reinvest in our significant regional parks. So Lacamas Lake Regional Park and Frenchman's Bar and Vancouver Lake, and all of the big regional parks that are the most visited parks in our system, we would be able to reinvest in those and reinvigorate those to meet the changing desires. And then on top of all those three scenarios, there are some staff actions that we really need to focus on, regardless of which scenario and what our future looks like. So the first is rebalancing our parks and nature portfolio. And this is to Janice's question earlier. We have a lot of neighborhood parks in the urban growth boundary. Neighborhood parks are typical of a city or a municipal park system. They're not typical of a regional provider like a county. So figuring out what that transition looks like and ensuring that our park system is a regional parks system and not a neighborhood park system. Revitalizing our regionally significant parks. So we just talked about this, but essentially taking our existing assets and operationalizing them and by creating synergistic partnerships. So think of the small businesses who want to operate a boat rental, a canoe kayak rental on a water body, for example. Ensuring that we create those partnerships revitalizes those big regional parks and pulls people in to participate in activities there. The third item on the list is really synchronizing with cities and doing the planning effort so that as cities grow and annex, expand into the county, we're doing that in concert with our cities. We're working with our cities to make that happen. The handoff then becomes simple. We've already done the planning. We don't have to panic about what's going to happen with this park or that park. We already have a plan. And then the fourth item is ensuring that our focus is on the future state and that recognizing that the county is growing really rapidly. And so we need to have our focus on that and ensuring that we're meeting those future growth needs. I'm going to just walk through a few examples of where this has been done elsewhere and where this transition has happened elsewhere. So this is Magnuson Park in Seattle. It's a city of Seattle park, but it's regional in nature. It's a big park. It was old, worn out. It was an old military base years ago. And it was transitioned over years. And it now is one of those places where the park has been brought back to life through partnerships with local businesses and small businesses and facilities that bring in revenue that help support operations of the site. You can see the ball fields there. There's a big tennis facility, indoor tennis facility at this park. There's a new connection with nature at this park through capital investment. Some really compelling, interesting elements within the park and amenities within the park that just has made it a treasure. This is what I mean when we talk about reinvesting in our regional parks. Burke-Gilman Trail, so those, we talked about trail connections and how vital they are. Burke-Gilman Trail was a long-term vision to connect communities in the Seattle area and is extremely active trail corridor, one for transportation, but also recreation. You'll see people running, you'll see people trying to get to work on the same corridor. So activating, building that network of trails and off right of way connections is needed to meet the future growth needs. And then the third park, these are all examples from King County, an area that has gone through this rapid development and rapid transition into a modern regional park system. So Marymore Park is a King County park that was needing reinvestment. And it was a huge piece of land right in downtown Redmond, run operated by the county. The county recognized that, hey, we need to operationalize this space. We need to create the partnerships and the programs that activate this space. And so this is directly pulled from Marymore Park's website. They have a really well-attended movie series and a fantastic off-leash dog park and some world-class concerts at Marymore Park that pull in revenue to sustain its operations. They have the Cirque du Soleil and really active athletic fields that bring in revenues to sustain operations. And they have a bike velodrome as well, some really interesting elements. Again, it's about taking our existing regional regionally significant parks and reinvesting in those and pulling in revenue to support their operations. That's what the future looks like. So we know we've seen the models for how this can work. We know the pathways exist to sustainability, and we know there are funding options that those other spaces have utilized to get to that future state. And so here are just a few, you know, levy lid lifts and levies and new levies or expanding the current levies, expanding an existing park district as a mechanism that can be used. Conservation Futures Tax, that's the legacy lands fund that allows us to acquire new properties. And that rate is a question. And there are a number of other revenue sources out there that we can use. These are just a few that we wanted to share. But not only is there precedent for this, there's a body of potential funding sources we can look to. And so what we are recommending is that we create a Parks and Nature Sustainable Future task team that dives into all of the data that we just reviewed, but then also evaluates that list of potential funding sources and options, that provides updates to council at various work sessions throughout their work, and at the end of their work presents a report to council and provides a set of recommendations to council on how we might get to this future state successfully, like other communities have. So that is the overview, and be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
So you're going to take this to the county work session?
Correct.
With the ultimate view of getting direction from them?
Yeah, the goal, the recommendation to county council is that this is really a fantastic opportunity to think about things differently, figure out how we're going to close those gaps and meet the future need. So the recommendation is let's create a task force, a task team to dive into these details and bring a set of recommendations back and update council throughout that process.
Over what time period?
It really depends on the task team and how focused they want to be. How much work they want to put into it. I've seen some that meets on a every other week basis. I've seen some that only want to meet once a month. And so the frequency of those meetings is key. On the staff side, you know, we are supporting that task team. And so making sure that we are getting data and information to that task team in a timely manner is really vital, so that they can then discuss and debate and provide an informed recommendation to council. But I would say, I would put it in the range of 6 months to 18 months, somewhere in there. Doesn't help much, does it?
What role will the Parks Advisory Board task? And then I have a comment after your answer.
I would see the Parks Advisory Board providing members of the task team, probably not the whole advisory board on the task team. The task team's probably pretty broad in terms of key stakeholders throughout the county. So typically you would have some business representation, you would have various park user groups. So you'd have representatives from athletic, youth athletic groups, adult athletic groups, horseback riding groups, fishing groups, hikers, bikers, walkers, parents, moms. So that's kind of just council members sometimes want to be involved in these. That's typically what it looks like.
Then my comment would be, I think you you made a similar presentation months ago, which was very good. And you had a list of prospective funding sources. I think I remember in the Soda Tax, which caught my attention just because it's. But I guess my initial thought, without understanding, you know, the level of detail you've gotten into so far, and asking hasn't actually been yet, but I would like to think that we're not going to let this be something that adds on to our challenges with housing affordability, so that park impact fees are not part of the discussion, or at least increased park impact. It's a huge challenge. Not sure that we want to burden newcomers exclusively with maintaining and developing our parks, but hopefully it's an opportunity to benefit from this. And so whatever that funding source is, it's something that I'll say is equitably shared. It doesn't add to a housing affordability issue that we're already struggling with.
Great.
O&M. What's
that?
The PIP fees don't go to O&M.
I don't think so, do they?
No,
they're for.
So PIP, you talk about operation.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, but to your point, I think the point you're making is that we need to have a focus on housing affordability and ensuring that whatever set of mechanisms are decided or recommended, that be part of the consideration. I would fully anticipate that'll come up at the task team without hesitation. That absolutely will be, and I would suspect that council would also say that.
I mean, I think this is great work. You know, it's good to be thinking about this. I appreciate you guys.
All right.
It's a good idea.
Thanks for your time and feedback. As this progresses, as we've committed to all of you, this is, as we've done so far, we're going to make sure that this is an ongoing regular topic and that we keep you up to speed, and that your input and your ideas and feedback is incorporated into the process. You are the key group within Clark County that makes recommendations and provides advice to council. So it's really important that you're aware of all of this.
From our team of two, do you need any sort of a go ahead on this, or is this merely informational?
You're
going to take the council on the 29th, is that what you said?
So 2026 is what it looks like right now. So I don't think the official agenda has come out yet. That's what it looks like. Thank you.
Anything else for the good of the order? Daniel says no, she's out of here. Bang. Oh, I need to talk to Lindy. How's Kirk Creek coming? Did they get dibs in on that?
Yes, it is in process.
Somebody's been push around on there.
Bids are in. Okay. Bids have been open, and so now it's in process.
Okay.
To finalize the preferred or the selected bid.
Okay.
Bidder for that project.
I need the alcohol condition.
Go ahead, David.
Oh, I was just going to provide a quick update on the bidding, but because we had both Kurt and